Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com.
Welcome to another podcast at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic, and the law firm of Gingras, Thompson, and Wachs. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Brother Nichols, let me play this setup piece from NBC on the Supreme Court.
Mitt Romney, the only Senate Republican who voted to impeach President Trump tonight, a decision likely to cement the president's legacy on the Supreme Court, solidifying a conservative majority for years to come.
My liberal friends have, over many decades, gotten very used to the idea of having a liberal court, and that's not written in the stars.
Romney, a frequent Trump critic, now aligning himself with the president's timeline, agreeing to support a vote for President Trump's pick to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
If a nominee actually reaches the floor, that I will vote based upon the qualifications of that nominee.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who will determine the pace of the confirmation process, blasting Democrats for what he calls their outrage and hysteria.
What could really threaten our system is if one of our two major parties continues to pretend the whole system is automatically illegitimate whenever they lose.
But Democrats are accusing McConnell of hypocrisy after denying President Obama's pick any consideration nearly 8 months before the 2016 election.
Sadly, Leader McConnell has defiled the Senate like no one in this generation, and Leader McConnell may very well destroy it.
Joe Biden arguing voters should decide.
By the time that vote comes up, if it comes up, there will have been close to 40% of the people have already voted. It's a violation of the spirit of the Constitution.
President Trump is teasing his big reveal this weekend.
I would say that I'm very close to making a decision in my own mind, and I'm going to reveal it on Saturday.
The president says he favors a quick confirmation, and Lindsey Graham, who chairs the Senate committee responsible for judicial hearings, is already declaring the outcome before even knowing the pick.
We've got the votes to confirm the judge, the justice on the floor of the Senate before the election.
President Trump appears to be zeroing in on at least two top contenders, both federal judges, privately interviewing Amy Coney Barrett for 30 minutes here at the White House Monday, with plans to meet Barbara Lagoa while in Miami Friday.
All right. Is there a more tragic human being than Lindsey Graham?
Wow, I think that's a legitimate question, which we could devote a show to.
The Beach Boys slipped into despair at some point.
Yeah, but he kind of came back. there's been a lot of failure in the, billions of years in which the world has existed. However, I really think that Lindsey Graham has put himself into competition. He's very, very near the top of that list. And the incredible thing about it is that exactly what he's doing. There's no lack of clarity here. He is trying to make his name the watchword for hypocrisy to such an extent that in the dictionary definition, it will, you'll no longer have, some sort of long description of what hypocrisy is. It'll just say, as in Lindsey Graham, right? And then he'll be in the dictionaries forever, and he'll have a legacy.
And in case people haven't been following, here's what he said a couple years ago.
If an opening comes in the last year of President Trump's term, and the primary process has started, we'll wait to the next election. And I've got a pretty good chance being the judiciary.
You're on the record.
Yeah.
All right.
Hold the tape.
Hold the tape.
We also said in another conversation, hold me to it, right?
Yeah, right. No? Oh, I've got, oh, I'm not done. I got another one. So here's his rationalization now.
We've got the votes to confirm Justice Ginsburg replacement before the election. We're going to move forward in the committee. We're going to report the nomination out of the committee to the floor of the United States Senate so we can vote before the election. That's the constitutional process. After Kavanaugh, everything changed with me. They're not going to intimidate me, Mitch McConnell, or anybody else.
But his statement to Jeffrey Goldberg was after the Kavanaugh hearing. Yeah.
And so this is the thing that people misread with Lindsey Graham. When he said, hold me to it, a lot of people assumed that that would matter with him, right? That you would hold him to it and he'd go, oh, right, I said that. Okay, you know, of course, I'll do as I promised. But that's just not how Lindsey Graham rolls. I mean, he just says, hold me to it, because it'll be entertaining for him to then laugh at you in your face for having believed him when he said that, when he suggested that that would in some way matter. And I think...
Is that owning the libs, John?
That's owning the libs now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's it. And I think... Look, here's the interesting thing about it. Graham, in truth, made a bet at a certain point. He bet it wasn't going to come... And he wasn't going to have to deal with it. We should always have known from not anything to do with the courts, but from his response to the 2016 election where he was going to end up on this. Because nobody at the presidential level of our politics said anything more damning of Donald Trump than Lindsey Graham. I mean, he shredded Trump. Reputation, called him a liar, called him, you know, just every name in the book, literally, you know, made it clear that Donald Trump, you know, was simply not fit to be president of the United States. And then when Donald Trump became president of the United States, even in the fall of 2016, Graham transformed into an apologist for Trump. And like so many people that do that, right, who damn someone at one stage and then become their ally, he knows full well that Trump, a you know, incredibly paranoid figure, isn't going to trust him if he goes just a little bit of the way, right? And so Graham has made himself the figure who goes all the way.
Well, speaking of people who have said damning things about Donald Trump and were probably hated by their classmates in school, here's the senior senator, or junior senator from Texas.
I do not believe the Senate should take up any nomination in this election year. It has been 80 years since the Senate confirmed a Supreme Court nominee who was nominated during an election year. And we should not start now. We have an election in just a few months, and I think the American people should be able to choose the direction of this court.
Now, that's when Barack Obama had 1 year left on his term. 11 months.
Yeah.
Okay? And they were so sanctimonious about it. Why is it that we've never really had a baseline of where we draw the line? I've talked to a number of people about this, and they say, it's probably July, maybe before the parties have officially nominated their candidates, that's probably a good place to draw the line. We don't really have a rule, do we?
No, there is no rule. And in this, we have to be honest. There's no constitutional barrier. There's certainly no, you know, Senate rules barrier to what Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz are talking about at this point. And what there was what was once referred to as a gentleman's agreement, what was referred to as sort of a sense of propriety, whatever term you want to use for it. There was a sense of how things worked, and we should fully recognize that that's over. That ended a long, long time ago. We don't deal in the days of Mike Mansfield or Bob Dole or people like that who actually had a sense of pride in the Senate, right, who said, no, you know, this institution will operate in certain ways. It was falling apart long ago. You remember people used to mock Robert Byrd, the former senator from West Virginia, for being such a stickler for the rules and the structures. People, sometimes Russ Feingold's critics in Wisconsin, mocked him.
Oh, they called him a process liberal.
Exactly. So serious about, you know, how it would work. And he was even criticized, by the way, sometimes by liberals who felt that Feingold was too committed to the rules, too committed to the structures of the institution. When those people were mocked, right, that was the point at which you saw it falling apart, not just because of what Republicans did, but because of where society was going, it much more toward a win-at-any-cost mentality as regards politics and governance. We're fully there now, and look, in hindsight, we could say, after the Merrick Garland dispute, and frankly, after disputes that go way, way back, I mean, go back 100 years ago, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, or one of the justices on the Supreme Court, Charles Evans Hughes, was nominated for president. So his place on the court went vacant at that point. And so then they did end up filling a place on the Supreme Court in a presidential election year. It was a very complex situation because you had a guy becoming the candidate running against an incumbent president who then named the replacement for that guy, right? And so we should have at that point, 100 years ago, established rules. But as a country, we always thought, wiser heads will prevail, you know, there'll be a sense of propriety, etc. Now we realize the deep failure. And that's a deep failure slide, not just as regards court transitions. It's a deep failure as regards all sorts of things.
Well, let's stay on the Supreme Court for a moment.
Of course.
Antonin Scalia and Ruth Bader Ginsburg were both confirmed almost unanimously, not quite. Very different voting records on the court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was appointed to the federal court by Jimmy Carter, a moderate Southern Democrat, appointed to the Supreme Court by Bill Clinton, a moderate to liberal Southern Democrat. Are those the good old days when people with strong views could be put on the court by the majority of the Senate without it being partisan?
Well, Feingold used to have a line that got him in trouble again with some of his liberal friends because he would say something along the line of, presidents get to pick their cabinet members and, you know, to even have a large amount of flexibility as regards their judicial picks. Now, Senator Feingold would clarify that because of the life appointment to the federal judiciary, that needed a higher level of scrutiny, and there were points at which you would say no, but you know there was this deference to the
right.
President, and interesting, you know who else expressed that view and practiced it? Lindsey Graham. It's interesting that Lindsey Graham in even into Obama's presidency, was someone who, when a...
Yeah, pre-Trump.
Was that? Pre-Trump, when a Supreme Court nominee was put forward by a Democratic president, there was a pretty good chance that Lindsey Graham, even if he disagreed with him, even if he asked some tough questions, would vote to confirm.
Okay, so Feingold voted for Roberts and against Alito.
Yeah, which was a very appropriate split. You know, as it turns out, you know, and it's not...
Yeah, it appears he got it right.
Well, yeah, it's not to, you know, pat Feingold on the back for everything, but in this case, I think we look at the court today and we see, you know, how you would make that choice. And again, I think that once upon a time, Lindsey Graham, you know, was somebody who seemed to respect that, and a lot of other senators. We just aren't there anymore. We the people, and certainly our senators, failed at critical stages to recognize the fraying of the process, and we should have known it from Merrick Garland in that situation, and no rules were established.
I realize this is conjecture.
Winner take all.
Had Hillary Clinton been elected president and Mitch McConnell remained Senate Majority Leader, would the Senate ever have approved any of her nominations?
That's a really good question. I think if I had to bet, I would say no, because there was a unique level of antipathy toward Hillary Clinton. It would be an interesting question whether, say, Clinton hadn't been the nominee and Biden had been elected. Say Biden had stepped up and run in 2016 and he became president. Biden, with deep roots in the Senate and some connections, maybe he could have kept it together for a term. It's possible if he had chosen someone who was, you know, very super moderate, even moderate conservative, you know, like this sort of balancing act. But Sly, I want to point something out there. If Biden had done that, if he had, you know, kind of deferred to the political realities, if you will, then he really wouldn't be picking necessarily the best and the brightest. He wouldn't have picked someone who necessarily should serve on the court, but he would be making a political pick.
Well, I'm not sure Merrick Garland was Barack Obama's real first choice to be on the court.
Had this,
right?
Whereas if we go back, right, let's go back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or let's go back to Antonin Scalia. In each case, if you're a conservative president, you're picking best and the brightest. Scalia was pretty much at the head of most of those lists, a lot of those lists. If you're a more moderate to liberal president, you're picking the best and the brightest. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was pretty much at the top of those lists. And so you had a circumstance where you did err toward, dare I say, excellence, or at least not necessarily excellence that I would agree with, right? I mean, I'm not a fan of a lot of where Scalia stood.
Except on the Fourth Amendment. He was good on the Fourth Amendment, yeah.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, and I think you hit on something else there that's really important, because if you err toward excellence, if you err toward, you know, somebody who's, wow, you know, I disagree with that person, but boy, that is a brilliant thinker who really is strong, who knows the law, who understands, who has a philosophy of this, that person is more likely to show independence. And it's important to understand that both Scalia and Ginsburg, if you look at their records, showed far more judicial independence going against presidents of their own party, going against ideological stereotypes, did it far more frequently than the casual observation.
I will always commend Antonin Scalia for protecting the First Amendment in the flag burning case. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols with us here at Sly's Office.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep Sly's Office.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Sly's Office.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome back to Sly's Office.com, brought to you by the Operating Engineers, Local 139. Also, our friends at the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Firefighters, Local 311. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us. You know, Donald Trump was briefly gracious about Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away. But like anything else, he just can't continue to act like a human being. Here we go.
I don't know that she said that, or was that written out by Adam Schiff and Schumer and Pelosi? I would be more inclined to the second. Okay, you know, that came out of the wind. It sounds so beautiful. But that sounds like a Schumer deal, or maybe a Pelosi or Shifty Schiff. So that came out of the wind. Let's see. I mean, maybe she did, and maybe she did.
First of all, he was on the worst telephone line in the world for Fox and Friends for a half hour.
You think they have set up a secure line?
Yeah. No. He never sets up a secure line. So he is impugning the character of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's granddaughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
Well, the remarkable thing about it is, if, let's say, it had been written as a note, you know, then, of course, even then, handwriting experts could instantaneously tell you, oh, that was fine. But in this case, you actually have a person who can step forward immediately and say, that's not true. She dictated it to me. I am the granddaughter. There are many other people who are well aware of it. And also, can I point out, it was totally in character.
Yes!
So here he is. Here he is. And this is Donald Trump at his, you know, kind of, it's not delusional. I wish we could say it, something so simple. It is at his most determined. He believes he can say things and a substantial portion of Americans will believe it, or at least entertain the notion. And so there he was, you know, suggesting a conspiracy as regards the fervent wish of, you know, an iconic figure in the American law. And in fact, it's done to obscure the real conspiracy, which is to deny that fervent wish, right? The president is looking for every avenue he can find to justify saying, yeah, I know it's ridiculously late in the process. I know that, you know, this clear statement has come from this person who the whole nation or a huge portion of the nation is honoring, but I'm just not going to do that. And he didn't want to say it that way, so he found a way to, you know, say it worse, right? To actually make things worse. And it, literally, when people read the history of this time, at some distant point in the future, they're going to have a very hard time believing it.
So when I drive through southwestern Wisconsin and I see the big Trump signs in front of homes, and by the way, there are a lot of Biden signs in small towns. As well. Out in the rural areas, it's almost all Trump, but you get into small towns and you start to see a lot of Biden signs. And people aren't just putting up signs anymore. People are decorating their houses.
It's
the most remarkable thing. Anyway, I saw, you know, a pre-made, you know, manufactured sign in front of somebody's house in Benton, Wisconsin, you know, vote Trump 2020, make the liberals cry again. And I posted that on my Facebook, and somebody responded, well, is making people cry a good thing? When did that become a good thing in America?
No, and I mean, especially when you're crying about an election result, right? I mean, you know, I got to tell you, you know, you look back in our history, how many people do you think cried about the result of the Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford election?
You know what? You just read my mind.
Well, I didn't know I read your mind.
Well, that is the race where we really had the last two moderates running against each other in a presidential. Yeah, right.
There were clear differences.
Yeah, but they were both within the 40-yard lines of American politics.
And let me give you another example. In an incredibly contested election, 1940, Franklin Roosevelt versus Wendell Willkie. Here you had. You know, they really went at each other. It was a serious election and got it finished, right? Wilkie was so gracious in defeat that Roosevelt invited him to the White House. They talked, and within a matter of weeks, Wilkie was Roosevelt's, kind of unofficial ambassador to the world. Wilkie was traveling to Europe and to China, to Russia, carrying messages. You know what I mean? It was sort of like there was a time in American history when you could have people go at each other. They could really disagree, but they could accept the reality of the results and actually find ways to work with one another. You know, and I'm not naive about this. I'm not romantic about it. I'm not even saying it was always good in every situation. But it was our reality, and I think that reality, Sly, is what caused an awful lot of people not to believe as the wheels started to come off, right? As the rules, the standards, the basic premises on which, you know, we organized elections, judicial appointments, all these things, the kind of agreements that made it work. And what we now realize is that all of that was very fragile, incredibly fragile. And we now are at a point where that fragility could, in fact, give us a Supreme Court chosen for incredibly political purposes at an incredibly political moment, which a tremendous number of people will see as illegitimate, and an ongoing wrangling over the courts that could well define the next 4 years.
Well, let's talk about Mitt Romney. He voted to impeach Donald Trump.
Okay. Which was right.
Okay.
He did the right thing.
And yet, the other day, you know, he's like, well, it's not in the stars, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, I think of Jimmy Carter didn't get to make one appointment to the court. All right?
I know.
Now, he was an unsuccessful one-term president, but nobody ever accused him of malfeasance or mistrust. And, you know, he didn't lie to the American public. He's going to die an incredibly popular man someday. Here we have the most noxious, irritating, law-breaking person in the world who's going to put three people on the court. Most of his life he's been pro-choice. It's pretty pretty remarkable that a guy who has slept with a lot of women and acted just reprehensibly is going to turn the court into almost like a Puritan. It's just taking us back to the 50s.
Well, which 50s? and but then there's a
that would another, be 1750s, okay?
And there's a Trump is a royalist. There's no doubt of that. But then there's another element of it too. Yeah, he got three picks, and sometimes it's sort of the reality that some presidents get more picks than others. We know that. Eisenhower got a lot, but two of those picks are in such contested circumstances that people, I think, credibly say they were stolen, right? One of them was Barack Obama's pick, right? It was, they didn't deal with the Merrick Garland nomination, and so it held over. And so there's a pick that should belong to another presidency by almost any measure. And then this one now is in many senses, being stolen from the next presidency because, of course, it comes so late that by many reasonable measures, it should be made by the next president. And so he didn't really get three. He got one. But he grabbed two more. And that ought to tell us everything about not just Trump, because we focus too much on Trump. It should tell us about the degeneration of our processes, the degeneration of our systems.
So, how do you see this playing out? I mean, it appears as though they're going to do this before the election, and they're going to vote to put Amy Coney Barrett or someone else on the bench. It sure looks like it's going to be Barrett. They're not putting a Merrick Garland up to sort of soothe things over. They're going hard right.
Yep. So you ask the core question: how is it going to play?
Yeah.
Right? Well. I have an answer for you in the form of a question. How long is our memory now? We used to have a pretty long memory in this country. Now we flip from story to story, week to week, right? Or day to day. And so I would say, if I was a Republican strategist, I'd say do this super quick, right? Get it done very, very fast. And then move on to the next issue, right? Imagine that our media and our politics can't stay focused on something for more than a couple weeks. And I suspect that they will operate on that theory. There is an alternative theory, not one to be dismissed, that they will play it out till right toward the election. You go well into October, do it in that way, or even that you have the hearings right before the election and then schedule the vote for right after. And why would you do that? Because it would so deflect from all the other issues, COVID-19, mass unemployment, crisis as regards our historic racial injustice, climate crisis. All the, you know, all we'd be talking about is court. So there are two kind of scenarios here. But either way, I think you do see a rush. Now, that's the one side. Now I go to what I think will happen as regards to politics. I genuinely believe that if they approve this nomination before the election, and barring who knows what other intervening factors, that it creates an incredibly good chance that not just Biden wins, but the Democrats actually pick up several more Senate seats than they were expected to win. And so there's a blowback. And incredibly enough, I am not entirely sure that all the Republicans mind that. I think there are at least some Republicans who have focused for so long on flipping this court and on getting this court that they are willing to sacrifice. They won't want it. They will try to avoid it, but they're willing to take the risk of sacrificing their political advantage in order to get the court because it has become almost, it's like their holy grail for
isn't
now.
It? Remember the old days where Republicans always blamed the Democrats going to the courts? They always talked about the legislative
the
money.
Court. Yeah. I think that's going to be harder and harder to sell.
Yeah, it's going to be. Well, doesn't anything even matter anymore? They'll say anything.
Well, they will. And so
we're living in a post-truth era.
And I think we have been for a while now. So the political plays on this are really complicated, and you can't make clear predictions. What you have to do is kind of follow your gut to some extent, and also we get into the realm of psychology. We get into the realm of what really motivates these people. What do they want most of all? And there is some evidence that for a long time, people like Mitch McConnell and Chuck Grassley, other key figures, have wanted the courts. This has been their determination. And think about this slide, just to give you an example of it. The country, we are in crisis as a country. We are still facing a pandemic with surges, even as we speak. We have a significant unemployment level, very high, and the possibility as we move toward winter that it could go even higher, much higher perhaps. All these fundamental challenges, again, the issue of racial justice, the issue of climate crisis, and the Senate couldn't move on any of those, not even on a COVID-related stimulus package. They just couldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. And now, flip the switch. We are able to approve a life appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court in a matter of weeks. I mean, what does that tell us about our country? What does it tell us about what they care about? Because I'll tell you, Sly, approving a COVID stimulus would be good for the Republicans politically, but they won't do that. It'd be good for Trump politically, but he won't do that. But they will knock down every barrier in order to fill a court seat.
Well, it warmed my heart. I was in Dubuque over the weekend, and I drove up to the up in the bluffs on the west side of Dubuque by Kennedy Mall, and to understand Dubuque, the downtown obviously is more liberal, but I was on the west side of Dubuque, middle class neighborhoods lined with Biden and Greenfield signs.
Greenfield being the Senate candidate,
Teresa Greenfield, who has a real shot of beating Joni Ernst, and
quite remarkable, really.
Joni Ernst is her meeting with the Des Moines Register Ed Board on this whole issue of judges. It's coming back to haunt her, and she's unequivocal, just like Cruz, just like Graham, just like all of them.
Well, they all are, Sly, and there's a reason for that.
They were all singing from the same hymn book.
Well, they all fear their primaries more than they do the general election. And so this is the great question in America. The question isn't about what they do or what the Senate does or any of this. At this point, the question is, how do the American people respond? I mean, because at least at this point in this country, they still get their power from us, right? These senators, you know, are able to be hypocrites because we have allowed them to be, right? We put them in this position of power. And so November 3rd becomes, you know, much more than just a fight between Trump and Biden or a fight between Democrats and Republicans. It really becomes a test of what we will permit as a country. And that's, I don't expect, you know, some states to flip. I understand that some states are hyper-partisan, but, you know, one way or the other. But in a state like Iowa, which has been competitive, has been politically combative for a very, very long time, I mean, that's a real test. Are they willing to accept? Are they willing to accept what's been done here? Or do they reject it? I mean, that's really the critical test.
It is indeed. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
It's a pleasure to be with you, brother.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.